For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Microsoft Teams is helping a bicycle company reinvent the way that they work.
We make low-maintenance bicycles for everyday riders. Once the pandemic hit, we had nobody coming into the showroom, so we started doing virtual visits via Microsoft Teams.
We're able to see two or threefold the amount of customers we used to be able to see. All of a sudden, we could open up our showroom to customers around the world. I really think it's going to set a standard for retail moving forward.
Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Martial Arts Podcast. It's a very special edition today, as always. I'm going to be hosting things. I'm Jake Litarski. You can find me on Twitter at JakeSki52. But today, subbing in for John Littering, we have Richard Mann. You can find him on Twitter at Richard Mann. We're going to be doing the regular, at Richard A. Mann. Today, we're going to be doing the regular rundown. We'll be breaking down the fights on the main card. We'll be making some fantasy picks, all for UFC 234 live this Saturday in Melbourne, Australia. Richard, thanks so much for joining me. It's our first pod together. So I guess if you can just give our listeners a little bit about your background, you know, where you all contribute to. You can talk about a lot of sites, not just RotoWire, but a lot of you have probably read Richard's recap work or maybe his fight stat rap article that we like to post every Monday here on RotoWire MMA. But the floor is yours.
Well, yeah, Jake, thank you very much for having me on. I have been, I guess, covering MMA from 2008-09-ish, and I have been contributing to Fightmetric in sort of a data analyst capacity since 2011. I currently do a stat preview for the main event of pretty much every show now for ESPN.com, and I also cover college wrestling for InterMatWrestle.com. So that's pretty much what I'm doing right now, in addition to my work on RotoWire.
Excellent. Yeah, we're up in Big Ten country here. Our office is right behind the Kohl Center and not too far from where the Badgers wrestle. So
I was actually at Maryland this weekend for Wisconsin and Maryland. And we'll say Wisconsin got the better of that one would be an understatement.
Oh, yeah. I haven't really quite followed the program much since I graduated from there in 2013. It's been a little while. But yeah, definitely diverse, good MMA analyst, good MMA mind to have here to help me break down these fights here. We've got a card that some people are gonna criticize a little bit for not being a stack from top to bottom, but we're gonna do our best to give you all the information we know about these guys, and there's definitely no denying that. I mean, our main event it's a banger. It's an excellent, exceptional fight. We're gonna have the middleweight championship on the line. Robert Whittaker, some people call him the Reaper. I think the Bobby Knuckles name is way better. He's gonna take on Kelvin Gastelum is the challenger. Whittaker checks in at 8,900 on DraftKings. Gastelum is 7,300, so quite a discrepancy there. The odds fall right in line with that. Whitaker's a minus 250 betting favorite. Last I looked this afternoon, and Gastelum plus 210. The odds to finish on this one are minus 175. Richard, I'm going to let you kind of step into John's normal role here. What were your initial thoughts with this fight, and kind of how do you see it playing out? And are the odds, you know, that far in favor of Whitaker, or do you think those are accurate?
You know, I think it's one of those situations where obviously I think Whitaker is a clear favorite. And my initial reaction was, I think the fight's a lot closer. I think that Gastelum has sort of a quirky counterfighting strategy, and I think he can definitely stay in the fight. But I guess if most people are coming into the fight thinking that Whitaker is a clear favorite, that kind of explains minus 250. So my initial reaction was that it should be closer, but then again, I do think there's a clear favorite, and that kind of explains the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was kind of in that camp, too. I mean, Whitaker's a former welterweight that decided, hey, I don't like cutting weight, and moved up. And, of course, Gastelum had the weight-cutting issues at welterweight, so he kind of was forced to move up here. So a lot of times in middleweight fights, you'll see Gastelum be very, very undersized compared to his opponent. But it's not so much here. 3-inch height and 2-inch reach advantage for Whitaker here. So anything about Whitaker's, like, striking style? I mean, he tends to, I know he's got a heck of a chin, and he does, the striking defense maybe comes into question sometimes, but if you can take shots from Yoel Romero, I mean, my initial line of thinking was that he can probably take some from Gastelum, too.
Yeah, you know, when I was actually working on my ESPN article for this this fight, one of the things that really made it difficult was they're very similar in a lot of the metrics that we track. For example, they both throw basically the same amount of punches to the head, body, and legs. They're both very focused on the head. Their striking differential is very similar. The key differentiator in terms of striking really is the amount that they throw. And I think that that kind of contributes to the difference of striking defense. Whitaker is a lot more offensive. He attempts a lot more strikes. And I think on one hand, that opens him up to a lot of reprisals, which is why his defense is so kind of lacking. But at the same time, I think that allows him to dictate the pace of the fight and really lead. And when you're in a 25-minute fight against a guy who may have cardio issues like Gastelum has shown at times, I think the fact that Whitaker is going to be the one moving forward, pushing the pace, and throwing more strikes, I think that ultimately it's going to be a close fight that comes down to decision. And I think that that output is really going to carry him to a victory.
And, you know, if we get a decision and you want to have the output, if you're, especially when we're talking about a 5-round main event fight on DraftKings. And I was a little bit back and forth on this. I think I'm going to go ahead and pick Whitaker. Like, we're going to do our staff picks tomorrow on the website, so you'll get to see who everybody picked. But this one, it's, I do give Whitaker the edge. And because it's 5 rounds, I think I'm going to use him on DraftKings. I don't know. Do you think both of them throw enough volume that maybe you could stack this fight and use both in a lineup and maybe get some good striking volume from the loser in this case?
I've thought about it, and my initial reaction would be that Gastelum really isn't offensive enough to make that worthwhile. However, his salary is so low. I mean, he's got, what is this, the it's one of the lower salaries on the card. Yep. So if you were to, you know, maybe fill in a lineup, it might be better to take him versus a guy who is an underdog in a 3-round fight. So I'm not sure if I would make that recommendation fully, but I definitely think if you have a hard decision to make, he's better than a lot of the options from an underdog perspective.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the betting lines of this card from top to bottom, there are a lot of seemingly lopsided fights. I don't think we're going to see what we saw with Fortaleza last week, where I don't know, it was like 5 of the first 6 or 7 fights underdogs won, and they were off to a really crazy start. I evened out a little bit towards the end, but I was having a tough time picking up underdogs on this fight. And since we can kind of agree that that Gastelum's maybe a little bit better than what the odds indicate, you know, just excellent in the pocket, he has a chance compared to some of the other guys that are plus 200 underdogs or more, in my opinion. But I'm still picking Whitaker. Are you going with the same thing? Do you have a pick for this one?
I am. I'm going to go with Whitaker by decision, I think, is my final prediction.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking Whitaker can get the knockout, but in the championship round. So it'll be late fourth, maybe fifth round, kind of similar to what we saw. I guess both the Romero fights went to decision, but I think eventually, I think maybe he can get the finish via knockout, just because you kind of alluded to some of those Gastelum potential cardio issues. Shouldn't be as much of a big deal as middleweight, but you know, Whitaker's been to the championship rounds in both of his last fights against the guy in Yoel Romero. That's just a monster. So I'm going to give it to him. I think that seems to be the general consensus.
And I do want to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say I do, not to completely play devil's advocate, but I do worry about the amount of punishment that Whitaker took in those two fights. And one of the things I'm working on from like a long-term stat research perspective is kind of the idea that chins are sort of like breaking the seal. And when your chin goes first and you start getting knocked down, you start getting, you know, really hurt in fights, that it's sort of a cascading effect. So I am kind of worried that, you know, he hadn't been knocked down in years, and then he got knocked down twice in the Romero fight. On one hand, Romero is a very hard hitter and clearly has finishing power. But on the other hand, it's like, once it starts to give out, is that a sign of things to come? So definitely don't want to write off Gastelum. And, you know, if there is an underdog that has a knockout chance, he has it. I just don't think it's a very good chance.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I used a similar line of thinking. Now, this is going way back, but I thought the same way in Tyron Woodley's first fight against Robbie Lawler. Lawler had just been through those absolute wars, you know, with Rory McDonald. And I picked Woodley in that fight for that reason as an underdog, because, you know, the chin's only going to stay up so long. And I think this is a theme will continue, maybe with a couple more fights on this card. But let's keep things moving here. We got another, we got the co-main event here, not a title fight, but another middleweight fight. A lot of people calling this maybe a symbolic changing of the guard in the UFC, but we've got Israel the Last Stylebender, great nickname, Adesanya. He's taking on a name that any casual fan should know by now, I would hope, in Anderson Silva, an absolute legend of the sport. But the odds in this one are pretty lopsided, as are the DraftKings salaries. Adesanya checks in with a $9,600 salary. Silva is $6,600. Adesanya, biggest betting favorite on the card that I can see. On a card where there's a lot of big favorites, Adesanya is a -670 favorite. Silva's all the way up at +185. And with that, the odds to finish are -195, which with... I'm checking here. Those are the best odds to finish on the pay-per-view portion of the card. So something to take note here, but this is pretty lopsided. As far as the numbers go, I would be pretty willing to bet that when staff picks get posted tomorrow, we're going to see a unanimous selection here. But I guess, what is it about Adesanya to maybe people that are newer to him? What is it about him that makes him so awesome? And how much exposure are you comfortable having?
I mean, I'm always reticent to take such huge favorites in DraftKings just because they eat up so much of your budget bankroll kind of thing. But I do think that certain fighters are hurt more by age than others. And I think the fact that Silva's offense and countering ability was so much based on his speed and his ability to be quicker than his opponent, that age has really hurt him. And I think that Adesanya is not going to walk into anything. He has a cautious yet explosive offense, if that makes any sense. And someone who's just as versed in kickboxing as he is, I think that, you know, it's hard to say that Anderson is the biggest underdog on the card. I mean, he does have the lowest salary in DraftKings, but I just don't see a path for victory for him. So I guess that is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Adesanya undefeated in his MMA career. He's just 29 years old, but he's got a ridiculous number of kickboxing fights. I think over 70 to his name. So definitely has experience in this type of competition. He got a pretty convincing TKO win over Derek Brunson his last time out. Brad Tavares was his. He got him by a unanimous decision the time before that. So lately, he stepped up his competition and continues to excel. Silva, on the other hand, the history of late isn't so great. I mentioned he's 43 years old. I think he's turning 44 in April. He also picked up a unanimous decision win over Derek Brunson, if you look at that on his fight log. But I don't know if you feel the same way, Richard, but I'm pretty sure that that was Derek Brunson's fight. I think maybe Silva got a little home cooking in that one. And if you don't count that one, Silva's last win was 2012.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't remember being particularly outraged, but I definitely thought that Brunson won that fight. And I mean, 44 years old in the fight game is is not an ideal situation. I'm glad that he's still fighting because he seems to still want to fight and still put on a show. But at the same time, it's just sad to see a guy who's probably one of the best fighters in MMA history really come in as such a big underdog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's a long layoff. That Brunson fight was February 11th of 2017. And then before that, the last time he fought before that, that was at UFC 200 all the way July of 2016. That's an event I was at, and that seems like ages ago. For perspective, that was the last time Cain Velasquez fought as well, if he can get that. Do you ever look too much into these layoffs, or does it not matter with a fighter as experienced as Silva?
I mean, every fight is different and more experienced fighters are probably affected less. But I mean, if you look at it, the long layoff actually is a factor. Guys coming off long layoffs, especially due to injuries, usually have a tough time coming back. One thing that I do want to talk about, kind of shifting gears to the DraftKings view of this, is that I think, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, I think that there is a lot of potential in this fight for this to be sort of a low volume fight where both guys kind of stick to the outside, because I think Anderson's schooled enough that he's not necessarily going to walk headlong into anything. And maybe this could turn out to be a fight that's very low volume on both sides and lead to, like, you know, a low score for Adesanya, even if he wins 30-27 across the board.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to put Adesanya in your lineup at 9,600, you are definitely banking on getting that finish in the first round or possibly in the second round. And I definitely see where you're coming from with that. Both of these guys have, I would think, a very high fight IQ, especially in the stand-up game, given all of Adesanya's kickboxing experience. So I could see an argument where they would want to think that that maybe they'd feel each other out a little bit more and the volume might be lower than some of their previous fights. At the same time, I mean, they're giving them the co-main event slot on a pay-per-view, and this is all, I don't really have numbers, this is more or less a gut feeling for me, but this, for me, is a changing of the guard with the UFC. I would not be surprised if Silva gets beat and decides to hang up his gloves, even though, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe if he looks good, but I mean, mid-40s here for fighters, that typically, it's very rare the way it is. So I think this is one of those where we're going to see a top middleweight contender emerge. I don't know if this is enough to get Adesanya a title shot, but definitely another a top five opponent at the very least. And this is, I mean, Adesanya's been in the main event spot before, so he's had exposure, but this is a real high exposure area. And we've seen this with other fights in the UFC when they're trying to build up guys. Adesanya wants a highlight reel. He wants something for his highlight reel, and he wants it to be against a UFC legend. So I think he's confident enough in his chin that maybe he will take a little bit of a risk in pursuit of that knockout. And I think he ultimately gets it done. But if you're using him in your lineup at 9,600, he pretty much has to get it done.
Agreed.
So you're going to go ahead and pick the style bender as well?
Yeah, I'm going to take the style bender, but only by decision. I know Mike be going out on a line or limb with that, but I think that the fight's going to be slow paced, boring, but one sided.
Mm-hmm. So an Adesanya decision in the scenario you described, you're looking at like 60 to 70 DraftKings points for a $9,600 guy, and, you know, 20, 30 points tops for Silva, even at that cheaper price. So maybe this is a low key fade one from a DFS perspective.
I don't know how popular that view is, but that was my reaction for sure. Yeah.
I'm going to give this one to Adesanya, but you may have convinced me that it can get out of the first round, but I still think he'll get the finish in the second round for me. So that's how I see this one playing out. But let's keep going down the card. These are ones that are going to be important to talk about because we don't have a ton of household names here after this. So we'll kind of keep the momentum going, and we'll talk about a few of these guys. The next one up is in the bantamweight division. We've got Rani Yahya going up against Ricky Simone. The DraftKings salaries on this one, it's a very narrow fight. This is one of the closest ones on the card, and of course the salaries and the odds dictate this one. Yaya's 8,000, Simone 8,200. Simone is a -125 betting favorite, and Yaya's +105, so pretty close to a pick'em. We'll see how the money kind of moves around as we march towards the end of the week. The odds to finish on this one are also a pick'em, which is a little bit surprising to me. We'll get to that one in a sec. Odds to finish -105, so, you know, pretty much a pick'em for all intents and purposes. This is a close one, Richard. Any thoughts on how this one might play out? What type of guy you lean towards from a DraftKings perspective, and I guess ultimately a pick?
Yeah, you know, I think Rani Yahya is a very, well, is very much a throwback fighter. You know, he's a guy who comes out, he does not like to strike a lot. He's not very good at it. He mostly is trying to get the fight on the ground and work for submissions. And he's been effective enough to keep his job in the UFC for all this time. I think that in some ways, Simone can win the fight, but I don't necessarily think that his style matches up particularly well. He's not a huge finisher, and the finishes that he has are mostly by decision. If he is going to win this fight, he's going to have to stay out of trouble for a round or so and then hope to come on late. It's entirely possible, and I think that's why the lines are so close. I personally favor Yahya. I think that he's going to be able to get a takedown or jump for a submission. And, you know, it's just a different level of grappling. And we see when guys, you know, we saw it last week against Lyman Good and Damian Maia. I'm not saying Yahya is the level of Damian Maia, but you see that Lyman Good's a guy who wrestled coming up and he had never been submitted before. He gets in there with a better grappler and, you know, he doesn't even fully get taken down. He stands up right away and he still gets submitted. So mm-hmm. I think that's more likely, but I would not be surprised if Simone won the fight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved it in your fight recap article this week. You mentioned how Damian Maia got the win without landing a single significant strike, and that was just astounding to me. My ESPN stream was having some problems, and suddenly it got delayed, and I got the notification on my phone before the fight even started, and I was disappointed I didn't get to see it, but it was just like, well, now we'll move on. But anyway, yeah, not quite. I agree. Definitely not on Maia. Maya's like an all-world elite grappling level here, but that's kind of the path to victory here for Yahya. I mean, he's got three wins in a row here. You know, the names, not necessarily all that impressive. Luke Sanders, Russell Doan, Henry Briones, of course, all by submission. One Kimura, one arm triangle choke, one heel hook. So, of course, he can do it in a variety of ways. He's never knocked anybody out, so maybe that's, for some, that's a red flag on DraftKings, but the stoppage rate with him is excellent. 20 submissions in 29 professional victories here. I mean, so you think he can get the submission here and eventually hit that value on DraftKings?
I do, because when Yahya has had trouble recently, it was really only against Joe Soto. And Joe Soto is a guy who is very much into like the competitive grappling world. He does EBI and things like that. So he kind of knew how to approach Yahya and stay out of submissions while maintaining position. And I don't see that kind of discipline from Simone. Simone is a guy who came up through LFA, a decent circuit. He's looked all right in the UFC. You know, he's finished his fights. But I just don't think he's going to get it done. It wouldn't shock me. Like I said, it's going to be a close fight, but I definitely favor Yahya by a submission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, to finish his fights was an interesting thing, because looking at his fight log, he did take the unanimous decision from Montel Jackson. I agree with that. And then his only other, you know, official UFC fight was against Mirab Dvalishvili, and that one was one that he was losing, I would say, for most of the fight, and then just in the final seconds, they gave him kind of a technical submission win. He had Dvalishvili in a real tight guillotine, but Dvalishvili was kind of bicycling his legs, and he was trying to show that he was still out there, but they eventually gave him the win. So I'm sure he deserves a win, but maybe I'd put a little bit of an asterisk towards that one. I mean, I think he was getting worked in that fight, and Yahya's not going to bring the same kind of striking in that fight, or maybe not even the same kind of pace. Yahya gets me. He's someone that's calm and collected. But I still think he can get that finish, and he'll be able to get him. I mean, Simone has been taken down 8 times in those 2 UFC fights, so he's definitely susceptible to the takedown. The only thing with this is, like, I'm trying to predict ownership here, and, you know, even in the early staff picks that I'm collecting, a lot of people are on Yahya. Do you think that might be too chalk almost?
Well, it's interesting because, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to take him. You brought up the Dvalishvili fight, and if you remember, Simone got taken down a lot and he fought his way up. And I think a guy like Yahya would be able to use those opportunities to set up submissions. But you said that, you know, a lot of people in the picks and everything are taking him, but he has gone from a betting favorite to a betting underdog. So perhaps, you know, it's a little bit like DFS pro players or whatever you want to call them versus the public. So it will be interesting to see how that works out with, you know, the general in the general, what's the word I'm looking for, ecosystem of DFS players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite the complex ecosystem. But, you know, for a guy like me that only does a couple lineups, I think I'm definitely throwing Yaya in there, because we'll talk about underdogs a little bit later on in the show. But there's just not a whole lot that I like. And the 8,000 gives you at least a couple hundred to put towards another favorite. So this one's for me, too. I'm going to take Yaya by submission. I think maybe Simone can outlast him in the first round, and we'll see. You know, I'll just stick to second rounds here, and I'll go second round sub here. So I think we're in agreement there. There are going to be a couple Ricky Simones, I think, when we get our staff picks. And again, I'll be posting those tomorrow. Anything else on this fight, or should we move on to the next one?
No, I think that covers it for me.
All right. So next up, we've got a battle between a couple of relative unknowns. There's not a whole lot of film out on these two ladies. It's a flyweight matchup between Montana De La Rosa and Nadia Kasim. The salaries have De La Rosa a pretty big favorite. She's 8,800. Kasim 7,400. De La Rosa minus 265 betting favorite. Kasim plus 225. The odds to finish on this one are plus 100, which is actually, I mean, you know, for your average women's flyweight fight, you don't see a ton of that. You know, listening to the couple of fights on De La Rosa, three-time high school All-American, she was on season 26 of the Ultimate Fighter and lost in the quarterfinals to Nico Montana. She seems pretty good on the ground to me. That's definitely my inclination here. I guess, what are your thoughts on these two, and are the odds and salaries appropriate for this one?
Well, I'm starting to feel a little guilty for the chalk, but I think that De La Rosa should be a healthy favorite in this fight for a couple of reasons. One, Kasim is mostly a striker. She has a traditional martial arts background. She came up in Taekwondo, and, you know, she throws a lot of kicks, and she's a decent striker. But, you know, De La Rosa comes from a wrestling background. She showed that when she was on Tough. Plus, Kasim is coming up in weight. She was fighting at 115, and she was struggling to make the weight, so now she's up at 125. And while I do think being undersized is sort of blown out of proportion a lot in MMA, I think that because she's facing a wrestler, it's probably going to hurt her, and I think it's going to really make it harder for her to stay off the ground. So I think that Montana has the better avenue to victory through her wrestling. So I think she's the rightful favorite, and I think that's explains the line and the DraftKings price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on this one. This one is one I tried to keep an open mind and not really take the odds into consideration when I started to look at the last couple of these fights. I mean, Kasim, yes, she has one UFC fight at strawweight. I think she missed weight for that fight, if I remember correctly. So now, you know, moving up to flyweight here. You know, again, there's not much film, so I just watched the one Alex Chambers fight, which she won via unanimous decision. She only has 5 professional bouts in her career. And, you know, again, you said moving up from strawweight, we covered that. She had 4 stoppage wins kind of against no names. And then I do think there are submissions in her arsenal, which De La Rosa will have to be careful of. She attempted what looked for a second to be a pretty nasty heel hook in the Chambers fight, and I think Fightmaker credited her with like 6 submission attempts in that fight. So she's trying for him at least, just not quite as successful. But when it's all said and done, I think I'm going to go De La Rosa here. I mean, 7 of her 9 wins are via submission, so even the high DraftKings price might be able to pay off. Of course, you got to have that stoppage. I mean, not to discredit the wins, but her second one was against Rachel Ostovich, who she was subbed even quicker by Paige VanZant recently. So just kind of, if we take common opponents into account there. And then, of course, the height and reach advantage goes to De La Rosa. I'm with you on this one. I think this is going to be mostly the case. One thing I'm probably going to do, though, is I'm going to stay away from this fight on DraftKings because De La Rosa's price is pretty high, and I saw enough from Kasim in the Chambers fight to think maybe she can ward off some of those submission attempts, and this one could very much end in a decision. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think we're destined for a decision in this fight either way. I mean, if you're really locked in on De La Rosa for DraftKings, then you're hoping that this is a fight where she's getting a ton of takedowns and a ton of passes and running up the score that way. And, you know, you kind of mentioned that Kasim was able to scramble and go for submissions against Chambers. So it's possible that she'd be able to keep her in guard. And then we're looking at a fight where maybe 3-4 takedowns, you know, maybe 20-30 significant strikes, and then we're looking at, you know, another 60-70 score, which probably isn't worth 8,800.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just looking at kind of other fighters in that 8,800 tier on DraftKings too, which is what I like to do when thinking about these. I mean, I don't know, Kai Kara France is 9,000. I think he probably has a pretty decent chance at a stoppage here. Kind of looking around. Oh, it's because I've got some in my lineup here. I've been playing around. I mean, using her is going to limit your ability to use Adesanya. It might limit your ability to use Whitaker. Another guy that I kind of like is Devontae Smith. I think he's got some star potential. I mean, he's 8,600. Like, I would probably rather use Devontae Smith at 8,600 than De La Rosa at 8,800 and kind of try to hunt that stoppage. But maybe that's just me. So I think we can pretty much agree that this one's a fade for me on DraftKings. Anything to add on this one, or should we head on to the last one?
Well, so you did mention both Devontae Smith and Kai Kara France, and I just wanted to touch on this. I guess it's a good time. But I do think that those are two fights, and maybe the Ishihara-Kung Ho Kang fight, I think those are three fights that maybe would be on the main card if not for the fact that these prelims are on ESPN. Mm. And I think that it's kind of interesting that maybe the bout order was juiced that way to give the free TV some fights that perhaps in the past would have been on pay-per-view.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because they kind of did the same thing with the first ESPN card ever, where they kept Donald Cerrone and Hernandez on the main card. And, you know, turned out to be an awesome fight, awesome performance by Cerrone on ESPN. And, you know, they were left with a couple, you know, I don't want to say amateurs, but not too far off from the amateur days in the, you know, in the Greg Hardy fight that, of course, you know, we know how that one ended with the disqualification there. So I wonder if this is a theme that we'll continue to see moving forward as we start to juice it up, or if it's something that'll maybe just continue during the first couple months of ESPN until they kind of get that established fan base locked in.
Right. I mean, it really doesn't bother me. I have to watch the whole card anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we're all watching from front to back. And like every other MMA media member, I'm sure both of us can attest to how awesome the earlier start times have been lately, but not sure that's going to apply with the regular pay-per-view here. All right. We got one more matchup to discuss on the pay-per-view. It's a light heavyweight bout between Smiling Sam Alvey and Jim the Brute Crute. Excellent nickname there. Alvey's 7,900 on DraftKings. Crute is 8,300. Alvey's plus 120. Crute minus 140. So those odds and salaries match up here. Odds to finish on this one are plus 100. This one is one that with the early picks that I've got, we didn't share picks before going into this fight, so we're kind of both coming in cold. But with the early picks that I've got, this one's a little bit more back and forth. Definitely seeing a couple underdog picks with Alvey in this one. But how do you see this one playing out, Richard?
And this might be a crutch that I have, but I always have a hard time picking not only Alvey, but fighters like Alvey, in the sense that he is giving up fundamentals of striking for the purpose of landing a power shot. So he's literally going out there and doing nothing but looking for power shots. The thing is, he's been very effective at it, but it's just hard for me to look at his fights and like pick him to win, because he's throwing with a very low volume. He's taking shots that he probably doesn't need to take and hoping for a big shot. And, you know, he's beaten good fighters that way. But I mean, if I'm just breaking it down from a fundamentals perspective, I have a hard time picking him. Now, Crute, on the other hand, is more of a grappler than I would think. And so that's kind of an interesting twist, because he's going to have to close the distance against Alvey, look for those takedowns, get the fight on the ground. And Alvey actually is a pretty decent wrestler, and he does throw hard. So I think he's going to have to use a little bit more striking than he would probably like to close the distance effectively, avoid those punches, and then go to work on the ground. Alvey's hard to finish, so he's going to have to either hold position or to get the submission, because Alvey's going to continue to throw those power strikes until the final bell. So I favor Crute, but I think in a lot of ways that's my own personal stylistic bias that is coming into play. So I might not be the most level-headed from that perspective. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I got you though with the, I like the wrestling comment. It's really defensive wrestling. You know, Alvey's not a guy that's going to throw takedowns really. Again, he's going to come out headhunting, but he does have an 84% takedown defense. So opponents have been unsuccessful at trying to get him out of his game and getting it on the mat. That's a pretty respectable rate here for the UFC. And, man, we're pretty arm in arm for this one, but I'm with you in that philosophy with Alvey. And, you know, maybe part of it is the very last film that I watched before sitting down to record this with you was watching Alvey get knocked out by Lil Nog in his last fight. And I don't know, just didn't look good. You know, he's throwing to get, or he's getting hit to throw. You always bring up striking differential in your articles. And so that's gotten me to start looking at that. And Alvey's is negative. So there's that. And you mentioned like his grappling skills that Crute has, and you know he's just 22 years old, but he looked pretty good in the fight against Paul Craig. I mean, he's a BJJ brown belt. He's undefeated as a pro. I mean, the mat skills were pretty good. He was taken down by Craig, but was able to get reversals and kind of get back to his feet when he needed to. Ended up attempting 4 submissions in that fight before eventually finishing with what I believe was a Kimura. Yeah, he finished that in the kind of closing seconds of, he was in the last 10 seconds of the fight, actually. So that showed, you know, skill above someone who's 22 years old. Now that's where the real big differentiation comes here. Alvey is 10 years older. He's got 16 UFC fights, and this will be Crute's second fight here. So do you ever play into that experience advantage a whole lot, or are you mostly just kind of looking at this from a pure skill-based perspective?
I think that can play a factor, and I do think that's an element of Alvey's success. He is very seasoned, and he does sort of have like a gamesmanship about his game. He knows what he's good at, and he doesn't waste a lot of time trying to be something else. So in that sense, I do think that's a factor. And, you know, as I said before, if this fight gets past the first or second round, I would immediately swing to Alvey in the later rounds, because he's been there before and he knows how to pull out these victories, and he's able to retain his power into those later rounds. I do question his move up to light heavyweight. I know no one likes cutting weight, but if you're the kind of guy whose entire game is based on power, I don't necessarily think moving up to 205 pounds is the best career move. Do you remember when he moved up? I think it was
when Alvey did
3 fights ago. Yeah. It's been a while, right?
Yeah. I'm kind of checking the log right now. John Biante. When he fought Rashad Evans in 2017, was that at middleweight? Because I remember Rashad tried to move down.
He moved up for the Marcin Prochino fight in 2018. So his last 3 have been at light heavyweight, and he scored a first round knockout, then he went to decision, and then he got knocked out. So, and before that, he had a pretty solid string of decision victories. So I'm not really sure if the power is that much diminished by moving up in weight, but I do think that it probably wasn't the best career move for him. Mm-hmm. But that's just my opinion.
I mean, he did get knocked out by a 42-year-old in his last fight. So if anything, that plays into your point even better.
Right. True.
Okay. All right. Well, that concludes the whole pay-per-view portion. We got through it. Richard, thanks for bearing with me here. Some of these fights, hopefully we taught you guys something or another here as you start to build those DraftKings lineups. But speaking of DraftKings perspective here, you know, you mentioned there are some more intriguing fights as we get down the card. In all those fights, or even in the ones that we just talked about, do you got any value plays, any live underdogs you think might be worth a look to really help fill out those DraftKings lineups?
I actually think that Austin Arnett, yes, he's 1-2 in his last 3 fights, but I think that both Shane Young and Austin Arnett are both guys who haven't fought the best competition and both haven't looked that great. And there's a pretty wide gap in terms of price. Austin Arnett is at 7,100 and Shane Young is all the way up at 9,100. I think that's a pretty close fight. And Fight Matrix actually does ELO predictions, which is based on the computerized ranking formula. And they give Arnett a 40% chance. So I think that that's actually probably a pretty live dog. And, you know, as you kind of said before, a lot of the underdogs on this fight card are not necessarily guys you feel great about. So if you take a guy who's as low as 7,100, that really opens you up to flesh out your lineup with some, you know, more favorite fighters. So I would consider doing that. You know, sometimes I think it's smart to just take one really bad priced guy and then fill in with higher priced guys or try to spread it out. So I think for this card, I would probably take, you know, one or two flyers and then fill out with more favorites.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to spend $6,600 on Anderson Silva and hope he's got something left, I've seen people doing that before. But that's very interesting. Who's doing that prediction again? You said that's on Fight Matrix and they do their rankings. It's an algorithm thing. You can just kind of Google any of these guys, go to Fight Matrix.
Yeah, so on Fight Matrix, they have their own computerized ranking, which is based on LEO, but they've also, or I'm sorry, ELO. But they've also started doing just a pure ELO, which is what 538 uses for their basketball predictions. Okay. So I've been kind of looking at that recently. And they have Shane Young at 59.89%, and they have Austin Arnett at a little bit over 40%. So, I mean, that's pretty close in the fight game.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, especially that's like, it's surprising to see it's so different from the odds because Young's at minus 325 and Arnett's at plus 265. So definitely, I mean, 40%, that's better than that dictates. So maybe there's some odds value there. And yeah, like you said, that's one way to do that. I've just been kind of tinkering around with lineups here as we're talking today. I threw a lineup with Whitaker, Adesanya, and Devontae Smith in it. And then I used Yaya, and then I did what we were kind of against, and I stacked the Whitaker-Gastelum fight for that main event, which is definitely something to think about here. But then I had $7,600 left, and I started looking into this other fighter, very, very early prelims, so you'll have to tune in pretty early, but I believe his name is Callan Potter, checking in on the it's the second fight of the card. And we didn't mention this with Crute, but playing the whole Australians in Australia narrative, I guess you could say the same thing for Whitaker. But Potter's another guy who's fighting early on, you know, 17-7 as a pro. This will be his UFC debut, so I don't know a ton about him. But you know, he's an Australian in Australia, and he gets this guy in Jalen Turner, who's pretty inexperienced as well. Turner has just 11 professional fights under his belt, and he's another Contender Series guy. He fought and got knocked out by Vicente Luque, 6 months back in October. So, you know, maybe there's a chance there. Give him, I saw a couple other touts throwing this pick out as well. I'll admit that I didn't pop it originally, but I don't know, 7,500, there's somebody there. But again, I think the point that we can both agree on is that it's crazy tough to find underdogs. So that means for a lot of people, maybe giving Silva a shot, stacking a fight or going with one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, not to bring up the ELO favorite again, but the Fight Matrix ELO does have Potter 73.25% to win. So there you go.
So he's at 73.25% to win, and he's a plus 215 underdog. So, there we go. I mean, that's another resource. Odds, what? Yeah. So that'll give him even better odds value than the Arnett fight. But there we go. We've got two. That's been able to help us discover two underdogs here, and maybe that. I mean, if that's really the case, I'd be surprised if Potter stays around at plus 210, plus 215, plus 200-ish. I mean, maybe that's a decent bet to make, too. If I never like throwing a bet on the guys that I don't know a ton about, but that could be something to look at there. All right. Yeah, he opened a
plus.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say his lone UFC fight, I believe, was he got leg locked by Marching Held in like a minute. So it's possible that people just have a negative opinion of him because of his career so far, and that he actually has a lot more to show.
Yeah, I mean, that's throwing him into the fire right away. But all right, I think that's going to wrap things up for us today, our breakdown of the card. Any final thoughts on the card? Any fight you're particularly excited for, or anything else you want to close with?
I think the UFC 234 main event is a very solid fight. I'm pretty excited for it. Always good to see Anderson Silva, one of the best fighters in UFC history. And, I'm excited. I think the move to ESPN has added some interesting quirks to the production and the pacing. So it's interesting to see this is the first pay-per-view of that contract. So it'll be interesting to see if anything changes there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, most of us have been. I was a huge fan of the pacing in Fortaleza. I really hope they keep that up, you know, for the rest of these cards, and all signs are indicating that they're going to do that. So that's awesome for us in the media, and I think it's going to provide a better fan experience as well. Really excited to see how this continues to evolve under the ESPN family of networks here. Well, that's going to wrap things up. So thanks again very much for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts podcast. Again, Richard Mann, thanks so much for joining me today, covering for John this week. It was a pleasure talking fights with you for a little while. If you're out there on Twitter, give Richard a follow at Richard A. Mann. You know, he talked about all the different places that you contribute to between ESPN and Fight Matrix and Fight Metric and of course, RotoWire MMA. I like some of the graphs that you put through on Twitter and the wrestling coverage. He's a great follow, you guys. Give him a look. Of course, me, you can find at JakeSki52. I'll be tweeting all your MMA and all your college hoops content, because that's what I do here at RotoWire. But thanks again for joining me, Richard. John's going to be back with me prior to UFC 235. We're going to do the Bones versus Smith breakdown, Usman, Woodley, Lawler, Askren, just a hell of a card we've got there. Do not forget, there's going to be another breakdown. Fight IQ is going to give it a run Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. That'll be live on the RotoWire YouTube channel. You can check those out, do some Q&A with them. And of course, we'll post that on the site afterwards. And of course, if you're not yet a subscriber to RotoWire.com, go ahead and go to RotoWire.com/free or RotoWire.com/pod. All those links work. They give you a free 10 days to all tools, regular tools, non-DFS, no strings attached there. You won't need a credit card to set that up. Of course, all of our MMA content, our articles and fighter notes and updates, live recaps, all of that stuff is free. One of the things that we like to continue to make free for our subscribers, but there are a ton of DFS tools and other articles. Fantasy baseball season's right around the corner. You know, you can get your baseball draft software, all that kind of stuff ready to go. But 10 days, rotowire.com/pod, we'll do that one. rotowire.com/pod. Keep it nice and simple. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you guys next time.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.